Hello and welcome to Viewpoints. My name is Boris Chassaigne and I'll be with you for the next half hour. On today's show, Sackville Hospitals are hiring registered nurses and other personnel. Justine Graham is one of the new recruits.
Nursing was always something that I wanted to do. The opportunities weren't necessarily there for me originally. This opportunity presented itself, which is really great and has allowed me to progress my career.
Courtis Island is looking for homestay families to host international students.
International students program within SD72 has been welcoming students from Japan, Taiwan, Germany, Italy, Spain, and it's very exciting for us to see this developing on Cortez, this opportunity for education, because it means that we can offer more students an opportunity to come to this part of the world.
Some come to Canada as others just can't stop thinking about their future trip to Asia.
So currently we are working on raising about $80,000 to take about 30 of our students to Thailand, Vietnam, and Cambodia for 2 weeks.
And Nova Scotia is addressing the housing shortage. More money is on the way from the provincial government.
No government has added to the public housing stock in 30 years, and we're responding to the crisis. We believe that this is a very efficient use of what resources we have, and we're very pleased to be doing it.
Welcome to Viewpoints.
Follow us on Twitter at CanadaLJI and get all our stories on canada-info.ca.
So in New Brunswick, the Horizon Health recently announced the hiring of new staff members at the Sackville Memorial Hospital. Many feel that's great news for all those pushing for the restoration of services at the hospital. Justine Graham is one of those new recruits. The former licensed practical nurse, LPN, will start working as a registered nurse at the Sackville Hospital in June after graduating from UNB's bridging program. Sackville wasn't a hard sell for Justine Graham, who worked there as an LPN before deciding to upgrade her skills in 2019. Erica Butler spoke with Graham about her decision and also the challenge she now faces of finding a place to stay in Sackville.
Just in the short time that I was able to work there as an LPN, I really enjoyed just the community feel and the hospital itself. So it was always someplace that I had on my list as someplace I would love to return to work to. And at that time, too, there was kind of all the talks going around about possibly closing the hospital. So things had been kind of up in the air for a while. And then as I'm getting closer to graduating now, luckily there were still positions. As we know, there's quite a few positions still that need to be filled. So it's something that I was really eager about accepting to return to Sackville. So
you'll be returning then as an RN this time, will you?
Yeah. So a different job. With some more education behind me now, so it'll be exciting to return to a new position as well.
Did the concerns? I know a lot of people in town were worried that all the talk about the potential closure of the hospital, people wanted to highlight it as an emergency situation, but they also worried that the negative publicity, the word would get out and people wouldn't want to come work in Sackville because they were afraid that it wasn't a sort of steady gig. You're making the move anyway. Do you feel confident that the Sackville Memorial Hospital is here to stay and your job will be here to stay as well?
I certainly hope so. I do hope for the sake of Sackville and not only my position, but all of the other employees there as well, that the hospital is able to remain open. And ideally, we would return to having those acute care beds as well and no more closures of the emergency department. So, I mean, it's always on your mind that it could be closed, but at least in nursing, I know that there isn't really a shortage of jobs. Just seeing the support that the community has for the hospital and how everybody has been kind of pushing for it to remain open has been really encouraging to see.
And you're sort of an example of this bridging program really working out well for communities. How long were you working as an LPN before you decided to make the leap into that bridging program?
So I had been working for 3 years. So I had done 2 years in Moncton. And then I had just looking for a change. And I have friends in Sackville as well. And so I already loved the community. So when a posting became available there, I jumped at the opportunity. And then when the bridging program came out, so I was part of like the pilot program at UMB St. John. I'd applied just to kind of get my application in there where I had just moved to Sackville and taken that position, and then ended up actually getting accepted to school. So another move to St. John. But yeah, no, the bridging program has been like such an incredible opportunity. I knew that nursing was always something that I wanted to do, but the opportunities weren't necessarily there for me originally. I guess because when I was in high school, it hadn't been my top priority. So I did need some upgrading. And so I was eventually able to get my LPN. And then this opportunity presented itself, which is really great and has allowed me to progress my career. So
it is such an important ability to be able to, you know, for the system to allow for people to make those changes and turns, because more and more these days, people, you know, young kids don't know coming out of high school where they're going to end up, and your career can take so many twists and turns that it's great to have a program that allows that to happen easily.
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, had that not been available, like, I don't know if I would have taken the step to kind of go and do a 4-year degree after already completing my LPN. So it definitely kind of pushed me to continue my education, where it was like an accelerated program to get my degree. So it was a really great opportunity. And we need more registered nurses. And so those LPNs that are out there and that are passionate about the career, it's a great opportunity for them to progress as well. So
yeah. So what will you be doing at the Sackville Memorial Hospital? You're going to be an RN. Which department are you going to be working in?
So I'll be working on Brunswick West. So like the inpatient unit. So doing all sorts of things. So we're responsible for all of the care. And where it is a smaller hospital as well, the nursing staff do take on a bit more of a broader role, in the sense, whereas we don't have all of the amenities that, say, like Moncton or St. John would have in terms of like physiotherapy being there all the time or respiratory therapy. So I enjoyed that aspect of things as well. Kind of, it's a close-knit team. And so you're really the main point of contact and care for these patients and making sure that their needs are met.
When are you going to be starting your new job, Justine?
So at the end of May, I'll be beginning my orientation process with Horizon. And then within a few weeks, I'll be starting at the Sackville Memorial Hospital and complete an orientation. And then I'll be working full time.
Wow, that's great. Now, in between now and then, there's another big challenge you have, that we sort of have two looming crises in Sackville. There's not a lot of housing available right now in Sackville. Are you facing challenges in that regard as you plan this move?
Definitely. There really is a shortage of especially like rental properties, apartments and houses as well. Like there's just not much out there. So my fiance and I, like, we've been scouring Kijiji and Facebook, and we have like alerts posted so that when anything new is posted, we get notified. And there's just such a shortage of housing. And like one of the Facebook groups that I'm in is for Sackville Housing, and it's just inundated with people looking for housing as opposed to people who have housing available for people. So it's been quite a struggle so far.
We'll put the word out here.
I had made a post on Facebook there just in regards to housing and recruitment to the hospital. And so I have had a couple of people reach out to me who are keeping their eyes and ears open for us as well, which is great. So I'm hoping that we hear something soon.
Well, you know, we'll keep our eyes and ears open for you too, Justine. And an early welcome to Sackville. We're looking forward to seeing you at the hospital this summer.
Hopefully
not seeing you at the hospital this summer.
Yes. Yes, hopefully not seeing you, but maybe we'll cross paths at some point in Sackville.
All right. Well, thanks very much for your time, Justine. I appreciate it.
Cortez BC School District 72 is looking for homestay families to host exchange students starting this September. BC School District is preparing for an innovative high school program this fall called Cortez Island Academy, CIA, and it needs homestays to host off-island students. Two 10-week sessions will allow students to earn high school credits through highly experiential place-based learning that will encompass outdoor leadership, marine sciences, new media, and career exploration. The pilot program gives priority to Cortez Calus First Nation students, but the program also has been advertised across the district and internationally to bring kids from around the world who are excited to experience our way of life is really a wonderful thing, says Rhonda Terramura, homestay and wellness coordinator for SD72. Past international students have come from Spain, Germany, Japan, Taiwan, and other countries. More with our journalist Anastasia Avakumova on Cortez Island, BC.
Rhonda Terramura, Homestay and Wellness Coordinator for School District 72, spoke about the need for off-island students to be paired with a local home for the duration of one or both sessions.
A homestay program is how it sounds. It's a living opportunity for a student to take part in an educational program away from their natural home. And we've been doing this in Campbell River for the last 15 years as part of the school district. The International Students Program within SD72 has been welcoming students from Japan, Taiwan, Germany, Italy, Spain, you name it, and a few other countries that I've missed. But we have been doing this, and it's a wonderful contribution to our community to bring kids from around the world who are excited to experience our way of life. Our program is actually full in Campbell River. It's a very well sought out place to study and learn and live. And it's very exciting for us to see this developing on Cortez, this opportunity for education, because it means that we can offer more students an opportunity to come to this part of the world. So what we need for these kids is a place for them to live. They need somebody who has time in their life and some space in their home to offer them a room and a bed and the comforts of home and connection, 3 meals a day plus snacks and supervision and all of the things that you do in your life that are amazing, and your energy and zest for life to share with them and include them in what you're doing. We're probably looking at about 5 students coming internationally, but there will be students locally from the Campbell River area. So we'd be looking for homes for both.
Homestay parents will receive $900 per month toward the expenses.
100% there is compensation for having a student live with you. This is not an income. It is a reimbursement program. So the rate of $900 a month is set to cover the costs of feeding and whatever transporting, the cost of running the home and covering those basic needs really for the student. And then if there's more left over, then wonderful. But we do not want to see homestays going out of pocket to host a student. That's where the remuneration comes into place. So the student is responsible for their own personal needs. So personal hygiene products, any sort of extracurricular equipment or books or study materials or whatever it is that they're going to do personally with their time and what they need, that is covered out of their own pocket. For example, if there's field trip expenses or program expenses, that would not come from homestay, that would come from the student themselves.
The homestay program is open to all kinds of family unit situations.
Our homestay families are very diverse. Every home looks different. Every sense of family is different, and we really embrace that. There's no one type of family. Even in Campbell River, we have everything from, say, a single parent whose children are grown, who has lots of room and time and love to give and experience. We have retirees who also find themselves with time and love to have someone to cook for example. We have young families with young children who are getting out every weekend and seeing the sights and would love to help raise their children with awareness of different languages and cultures without having to travel, for example. Families with teenagers already there is a lovely combination as well. These students are now building relationships and friendships, not only in the school system, but to have a host sibling is a very special relationship. we do see all kinds of shapes and sizes of families, and we encourage everyone to apply. Don't feel like there's a mold that you have to fit into. It's more about wanting the connection, being open, and really just wanting that experience of sharing the place that you love with someone else who's new to the area.
Being part of the family also means pitching in with tasks.
We want them to have the full experience, to fully immerse into the family. They need to feel part of the family for their own sense of belonging, but also that's how families work, to be truly connected with each other. They need their role and their space in the home. So yeah, we want to see these expectations and routines develop for the student. They're not a house guest. They're not someone to be doted on. They're not royalty. They are here to be part of what you do day to day. So if chopping wood is something that goes on in your home as a chore, then yes, maybe with some guidance, if they've never wielded an axe before, we want to make sure we set everyone up for success and health and safety is number one. But yes, let's bring them into those day-to-day experiences. Dishes, whatever. Every home is different. So we like to set our homestays up for success. We give some guidance on what is fair and expected, but really you got to fine tune it to your own home's needs. And we encourage lots of communication early on, setting expectations in the right place from the beginning helps everyone adapt, because it's a process to adapt.
Tarimura also stays available to mitigate any conflicts.
It's not always smooth sailing all the way through. There's hiccups and bumps that come, but that's normal when we put people together who've never lived under the same roof before. So that's really what my role is, to be the coach and the guide and the sounding board for both the student and the homestay. I'm here to support and just to be that listening ear if needed, or to give some tips and tricks, because I've learned a few things over the last few years doing this. Quite a few students have gone through our office and they're all different, but yet there is definitely similarities and patterns that we can learn from.
She said the experience of both being and hosting an exchange student is a special one, and the district creates opportunities for the individuals to come together throughout the school terms.
I think the homestay community, they're going through a shared experience. The students and the host parents alike are going through an experience that's not like everyone else in the world. It's not like having your own child. It's not like a distant relative. It's very unique. And so I think the more opportunities where we can bring people together, whether it be Facebook pages, which work in Campbell River for some, or actual get-togethers. We like to, in Campbell River anyway, do a beach fire welcome in September when everyone's arriving to mix and mingle. We do a sports night that happens usually throughout the year, where sports leadership students open the gym and put on music and set up great games, and they're getting a great experience to be leaders, but our students are getting this opportunity to be socializing and normalizing, and chances for sharing stories, but also just having fun in an environment where they get to just be who they are and not be trying to always fit in, right? Because they're coming from a completely different place and background, and it's nice for them to just kind of take that sigh of relief and be surrounded with others who are going through the same thing that they are.
Abakumova in beautiful British Columbia, and you are tuned to Viewpoints.
So some come to Canada to enjoy our culture, schools, and way of life, while others are working hard to travel abroad. In Smithers, BC, the community, parents, and students from the Hazelton Secondary School are trying to raise $80,000 to take 30 grade 11 students to Thailand, Vietnam, and Cambodia for a two-week trip next year. The idea emerged when Heather Berry, an English and social teacher at Hazelton Secondary School, was reading A Long Way Home by Ismail Bey to her grade 11 class, a novel about child soldiers and the effects of war on children. During a class, one student mentioned it was difficult to imagine the experience and the world they were reading about, so Berry said, well then, let's go. Berry is confident in the positive effects of travel for young people. Some of these students have never left British Columbia or even their hometown. Pamela Haasen speaks with Heather Berry in Smithers, BC about this project.
So currently we are working on raising about $80,000 to take about 30 of our students to Thailand, Vietnam, and Cambodia for 2 weeks in March of 2023.
So that sounds amazing. How did you pick which students could go? Is it your class, or who are the students that are going?
So we put it out there to all of our grade 11 students, since they'll be in grade 12 next year. And it was a part of my program. Bit of a funny story. I'm teaching a novel in my course about child soldiers in developing nations. And my students were really into it. And they're like, this is great, but we can't relate. And I was like, well, then let's go there. And being a bit of a spontaneous human, I ran with it. And most of those students have signed up, and we had some applications and some write-ups about why they wanted to go and why they thought this was important to their development and their empathy throughout their lives. So, yeah, we got about 30 that were interested.
And so you're doing a bottle drive. What else are you doing for fundraisers?
Oh, we're doing a variety of events. Some of them are just for our school, since we are working with youth. But we have a concert coming up in Hazleton that will be at a church near the hospital, and that's going to be a concert. We also have an electronics raffle, so we're going to be raffling off a television and a Switch. And throughout the summer, we're going to be hosting youth volleyball camps and childminding. And then come August, we will be doing salmon raffles for canned salmon.
Oh, that sounds great. Now, just kind of getting back to the students there, what do you think that this does for them? I mean, you mentioned about it building compassion and empathy as well, but, you know, travel at this age, it really just, it opens your mind. What are you kind of hoping that this trip does for the students that do attend?
Oh, we're pretty excited about this. It's going to be really beneficial to a lot of our students who may not have had the opportunity to travel in the past and may not in the future due to different socioeconomic struggles that a lot of our demographic has. And we also feel that it might help them to choose what career path to go into, right? Or even to decide what to do after high school, which can be really scary. Do you go to university? Do you stay and work? Maybe this will encourage them to see more of the world, right? And step outside of that bubble that we tend to live in our first world lives.
And also too, you know, having sort of that autonomous approach in fundraising for something that you, not only you want individually, but that you want your classmates to enjoy as well. I think that that's something that's so important, especially in youth, to get them in that community mind as well, because Hazleton is pretty, it's a small community, right?
Yes, very small. And we are raising money actually as a group. That's something that was important to us, kind of like you said, raising for our classmates. So we're not actually raising money individually, we're raising as a group. So all the money fundraised goes to everyone. And so by January of this coming year, we have to have all of our money raised for all of our students rather than just say one student who can afford to put a few thousand down. So we're doing it as a group. For the group.
That is so cool. That is such a great like sort of team building exercise, I think, for a class to do as well. Have there been any concerns about international travel after a 2-year global pandemic?
You know, yeah, we did. But we're really excited. The company we're going with is called Explorica, and they last year alone, during the height of COVID, sent 60,000 students around the world, with less than 1% of students actually contracting COVID.
Heather, thanks so much. I hope that we can maybe speak, maybe even in the summer, to see how the drive is going, how the fundraising is going, and we'll catch up, because I think that this is a really, really cool opportunity for the students to have. And, you know, just the idea of travel is exciting enough right now.
Absolutely. And, you know, I also take suggestions. So if anyone in the public has any great fundraising ideas, I will take any ideas out there. All right, well, thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much, too.
Follow us on Twitter at CanadaLJI and get all our stories on canada-info.ca.
So everybody seems to need a place to stay these days all across the country. We heard from that nurse looking for an apartment in Sackville, New Brunswick, and of those students who need homestay families to come study in Canada. In Nova Scotia, the housing crisis is acute, and funding was recently announced to support and increase affordable housing initiatives in the province. The federal and provincial governments announced over $916,000 through the Community Housing Capacity Program, but also $21.8 million in a forgivable loan to subsidize 373 residences. Our journalist Ed Halverson has more.
The province has announced more initiatives aimed at increasing the amount of affordable housing in Nova Scotia. The federal and provincial governments announced over $916,000 to the Community Housing Capacity Program. According to a release from the province, the grants will fund governance and operations reviews, growth and development plans, create community land trusts, and other capacity building needs. Minister of Municipal Affairs and Housing John Lohr says one of the ways the Community Housing Capacity Program can be used by community groups is to develop a co-op approach to housing.
They know their communities best, and we're optimistic that this seed money will provide for more projects in the future.
Lohr was also in Dartmouth Monday to announce the Nova Scotia government will spend $21.8 million in a forgivable loan to subsidize 373 residences in a new 875-home development. The agreement between the province and Clayton Developments stipulates the units must remain affordable for 20 years. Rents in the new development could be as low as $605 per month for a one-bedroom apartment or $788 a month for a two-bedroom, based on current Canada Mortgage and Housing Corporation data. This project uses the last of the $35 million committed in the Quick Start program to create 1,100 new affordable housing units, but Lohr says the province isn't finished yet.
This Mount Hope was always part of the plan for the $35 million Quick Start program, yes. There will be more affordable housing announcements to come.
Lohr stopped short of committing the government to building more public housing units, indicating they prefer to find development partners.
No government has added to the public housing stock in 30 years, and we're responding to the crisis. We believe that this is a very efficient use of what resources we have, and we're very pleased to be doing it this way.
The new units are expected to be ready for occupants by fall of 2023. I'm Ed Halverson.
This ends this edition of Viewpoints, produced by the Local Journalism Initiative and presented by the Community Radio Fund of Canada in collaboration with campus and community radios across the country. You can listen to all our programs on canada-info.ca. Also, tune in to all the stories produced by our journalists working across the country in British Columbia, Ontario, Quebec, Nova Scotia, New Brunswick, and elsewhere on canada-info.ca. Their radio pieces are posted there on a daily basis. They allow us to discover Canada and our local communities from different perspectives. Thanks to our journalists Ed Halverson, Erica Butler, Pamela Hassan, Anastasia Avakumova, and their guest, and to our national coordinator Maureen McEwen, and thanks to the artists who grace us with their music. I'm Boris Chassaigne. Thanks for being with us.
Listen to all our news online at canada-info.ca.